Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Wollongong Local Planning Panel. Can everyone hear me okay? It sounds like our microphones are working all right. My name is Robert Montgomery. I'm the chairman this afternoon of the panel. I'll just talk a little bit about the panels. We'll introduce ourselves and then we'll move on to the business of tonight. This is a panel constituted under New South Wales planning legislation, and the purpose of the panel is to create the opportunity for the public to be heard, applicants and submitters to be heard on issues of concern to do with development applications, and also to provide both independent decisions in relation to certain matters and advice in relation to other matters. The panel, there's three of us experts appointed through the processes with the New South Wales Department of Planning, and one of us who you'll hear is a representative of the community appointed directly by the council. I'll introduce myself first and then I'll ask each of the other panel members. My background is in town planning. I've had some 35 years plus experience in local government, state government, and in private practice in various planning and executive positions. And currently, I operate my own private planning practice, which I've done for the last 13 years. And I also sit as chair and expert on two other Sydney Council panels. Scott, if I can ask you to introduce yourself.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. My name is Scott Lee. I'm a town planning expert on the panel. I have a background in local government planning as well as now private enterprise. I'm also on one other panel at Campbelltown.
Hi, good evening. I'm Larissa Ozog. I'm an expert in town planning. I've worked in local government for over 20 years as well as private practice. I've done some court cases. I'm currently contracted to Georges River Council, so I'm doing a lot of assessment work there. And I sit on another council, which is Cumberland Council. Most of my experience has come from the eastern suburbs, most of the local government areas in eastern suburbs. Thank you.
And Edgar.
I'm the community rep.
And well qualified to be so. Thanks, Edgar. Okay, there's four items on the agenda tonight. The panel has spent the afternoon inspecting the site, so we've been out to each of the sites and had a look. We've also read the submissions that were received in response to the applications, and we've obviously seen the business papers, which you would have seen on the council's website for this afternoon. How we operate is that we'll hear from submitters first, and the applicants' representatives will follow for each item. Each speaker is given up to 5 minutes to speak. The council staff will time the 5 minutes, and when you hear an audio signal, you know that your 5 minutes is up, and we'd ask you to conclude fairly quickly, sum up after that. The applicants and their representatives will often be given more time. Don't be concerned about that, because the panel expects the applicants to respond to matters that may have been raised by the submitters. So it's not an uneven situation. We expect the applicants to be able to give the panel some proper responses. I'll ask you to show respect to other speakers by listening in silence and let you know that the meeting is audio recorded for the public record. So when I call your name, just come forward, sit at the desk, speak clearly into the microphone so everyone can hear you and so your comments are recorded. Following the meeting tonight, the panel will adjourn to deliberate and our decisions will be published on the council's website, usually within 3 working days. Before we start, just ask each panel member whether they have any conflict of interest to declare. Edgar?
No.
Larissa? None from me. And Scott?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just in relation to item 2, I would declare a potential and or reasonably perceived conflict of interest in that matter. I'm currently involved in preparing a development application to be lodged with council for a childcare centre on land in the general locality at Wongawilli. So I will leave the meeting during that item. And also, for the record, I did not attend the site visit this afternoon. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. And that's in accordance with the rules and the operational procedures for the panel. Scott won't take part in any of our deliberations or the final decision as well in relation to that item. Yes, you may. No, it's another one in the locality. Yeah. Okay, the first item on the agenda is 7 to 9 Henley Avenue, Wollongong. We have three speakers registered. The first speaker is Joanne Dawson. Is Joanne here?
I'm one of the owners in the villas that are on the eastern side of the proposed development, and we don't have any objections to there being a development on the site. It's just more in a sense of the scale and the bulk of the development. So I was encouraged when I read the WLPP assessment report, because a lot of the objections that I submitted in 2017 were evident in the report. So basically, it's a, I'm not going to talk for 5 minutes. the bulk and scale of the development and the impact on the streetscape and the neighbouring dwellings. Also, would like to just highlight the increased gradient of Henley Avenue from east to west, and also the concern of the zoning of the R2 low-density residential that doesn't comply with the development is potentially going to be three-storey. And so I just wanted to highlight that. The current dwellings are a single storey, but with the gradient of the street, it sort of still, you know, gives the impression that it's a little bit more than just a one storey. I'd also like to mention that there's a non-compliance with the setback on the eastern side and at the boundary, and this would, you know, sort of potentially impact privacy and noise issues, and this is a nearer to my unit, which is the number one unit at Henley Avenue. I've also got concerns, or we all do actually, the owners, with the noise transmission from the proposed car park and also potential for headlight glare as well from the car park, because there is an open section, the eastern side of the proposed car park. Also in regards to the increased traffic flow in our street, it's not a very big street. The obstruction potentially of the intersection at Mackenzie and Henley Avenue. We're just concerned about that as well. So that's all I have to say. So it's more the bulk and scale of the building, privacy issues, potential for overshadowing, especially of our units, and the potential traffic ramifications as well. Thanks.
Thank you.
And I might have to leave early because I need to get back to work, so I just wanted to apologise if I leave early.
That's okay. The next speaker is Frank Clifford.
My name is Frank Clifford. I live in 4 Henley Avenue. I've just said that also I'm not opposed to the development, but I am opposed to the development scale size. I think considering the street is just a small street, the amount of traffic flow that would be increased for the area, and also about the junction with Mackenzie and Henley Avenue, it's a dangerous sort of part of town to be building a development of that scale. And I just say that I'd like to see it toned down a little bit. And the glare, as Joe was saying earlier, regarding the lighting with the cars, that's my main objection.
Thank you. So you're in the same townhouse development?
No, I'm across the road from
it. Oh, you're across the road from it. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you. That's the only registered speakers I have from submitters. Is there anybody here other than the owner of the land who wants to speak who didn't register? No? Okay. Mr. George Nikolovsky? And I understand you're the owner of the land.
I am.
Thank you.
So, first off, I'd like to thank the neighbours for their input. It's been very helpful. This process, from my perspective, started well over 2 years ago, and it's interesting to note the architect, PRD Architects, is not here at this point. They initially submitted DA 2017-518 on the 11th of May 2017. That was rejected by council a couple of weeks later, 23rd of May 2017, on the basis that the architect did not know that there was a need for a design review panel, and hence an additional fee was paid by myself for a resubmission of this current DA, which is DA 2017-719. I just find it surprising that an architect, day in, day out, has no idea that such a proposed development would require.
Yeah. Can I ask you, the architect in question is not here to...
His choice.
..respond to those.
Mm-hmm.
And it really doesn't help the panel to hear what you think about your, I'm assuming, former architect or current architect. We really want to hear about, your response to the issues that have been raised.
I'm just providing some context.
But it sort of doesn't help to
Understand.
Cast those sort of aspersions.
No, no. It's not a dispersion, it's a fact.
Well, it's not helpful. Thank you.
No, appreciate that the facts aren't helpful. Sticking to the facts again, once the DRP visited the site in July of 2017, council did take, 5 months to come back on the 21st of December 2017, we'll call it six, given the Christmas and everything else. And as part of that, I was quite surprised that the feedback from council was that the original plans, building height was exceeded, floor space ratio was exceeded, and then there were obvious concerns with the design that the design review panel put forward. Working with the architect, amended plans were submitted, and I understood that that they were minimal changes that were required in order for the DA to then comply with the design review panel and everything else. As I've found in the WLPP report, that assessment coming back from council seems to indicate that those cosmetic, if I can call them that, changes that the architect put forward did not meet the required changes. In fact, I would go as far as to say that, it was an exercise of, working with council to try to, come up with some sort of an agreement. And I refused the architect's last amendment because essentially it was, cutting back on the floor space where essentially two bridges were connecting two buildings, and it was just completely out of character. In order for the development, those additional amendments to be put forward. What I would like to say is that in regards to the executive summary and the background section of the WLPP report, there's a section there that says the applicant was invited to withdraw the application, however, has not done so, and it is now appropriate that the application be determined. So I have some questions in regards to that. When was the invite to withdraw the application made? How did Wollongong City Council communicate this? And where is the formal communication? Because I've never received any such communication asking me to withdraw.
I can respond to most of those questions. Yep. My understanding is that the applicant is the architect. They're the applicant on the application form, and the council would normally correspond with the applicant because that's whose contact details are on the application form. In terms of being suggested to withdraw, the council would always do that in writing, either by email and or hard copy letter. And it would have been, to get to this point, it would have been some weeks ago at least, probably longer.
Received it.
Well, you wouldn't. Well, if, as I say, the council has the relationship. When a development application is lodged, it has who the applicant is. And the relationship is between the applicant, the person's name on that form is the applicant, and the council. It seems to me that what you've been describing is some communication issues between yourself and your architect.
Well, I mean, the council was kind enough to invite me to this meeting, so they do have my details and something of significant.
Well,
something
I didn't say they didn't have your details. They have your details, but in terms of correspondence about the application and suggesting withdrawal or changes, they would have gone to the architect. The architect would have received the notes from any DRP, would have received any other suggestions by council in relation to design amendments. So, as I say, I think from what I'm hearing now, I think there's been communication issues between you and your architect. So I don't think the council has erred by not asking you to withdraw it because...
No, I'm not,
you can't withdraw it because you're not the applicant.
Yep. No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm just simply asking where was the formal communication, and you've answered that. So I appreciate that.
Yep.
Just on the process for objections, all communication is in English. Now, the folks in the neighbourhood there, the neighbour behind on Mackenzie Avenue, across the road, my parents, for example, who are owners of 10 Henley Avenue, 8 Henley Avenue, 2 Henley Avenue, are all in support of the development. But given that I'm wanting to understand what the process is for enabling non-English literate people to actually provide input in support.
I'm pretty sure that all council correspondence has a reference to the telephone interpreter service. Yeah, that's my experience.
Okay, appreciate that. Thank
you. So just for those who didn't hear the answer from the council staff, the reverse side of council's correspondence has the contact details for the telephone interpreter service, and my understanding is that those contact details and the advice is in various languages that are known to be spoken in the community.
Appreciate that. Thank you. In terms of some of the feedback that's been provided by those objecting, look, my intention was that what was to be submitted would be a complying development application. Now, in reading in some of the feedback that's been provided, and I'm sure, you know, without prejudicing your decision, I'm sure that you know, when there's a perception that there's three floors, that there's floor space ratio that's exceeded. The original submission, which exceeded the height. Are these common occurrences when DAs are submitted, not to mention all the DRP input in regards to the design itself? You know, I'm new to the game. I'm just, you know, wanting experts' opinion in terms of is this normal for such fundamentals to be, I guess, thrown to the side and whatnot, and have submission go through on that basis.
My understanding is that the application has been around for nearly 2 years,
mm-hmm.
And various requests have been made either by the DRP or by council in relation to what's required, and those requests haven't been addressed, and that's why the application is recommended for refusal.
Yep. Okay. Okay. No, that's really all I have to say. I guess in layman's terms, I guess from my perspective, and please correct me if I'm wrong, why it's deemed to be refused is that it's deemed to be three stories in height, three stories, and the compliance is two stories for an R2 development. Floor space ratio is exceeded, and not to mention the respective design review panel fundamentals that were raised.
Look, if and I will give you some advice.
Please.
If the application is refused and the panel hasn't made any decisions tonight, if it is refused, you have an option to come back to the council to the panel via the council with an application to review the decision. And in that application, you're entitled to make some changes if you wish, or you can just put the same application back in. But my advice to you is that if you want to follow that path of if it is refused, that you come and talk to the council staff, make sure you have a clear understanding of the things that are deficient so you can respond to those if you do ask for reconsideration.
Yep, appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Oh, yes. Yes, thank you. So what that means is that the notice of determination, whatever it is, will be sent to the applicant, who is your architect. Now, there's two things you can do. It becomes a matter of public record, so you can simply go onto the council's website and you'll see the panel decision, and the determination will be on that website, so you can download that,
Yep. Look
at that, print it, whatever. Or you can look on the council's DA tracking system within a few days and you'll probably find a copy of the determination notice on there. So if there's that way, you can get it firsthand.
I'll get what I need without the architect involved. Appreciate that.
Can I just another point? If you do, whatever the decision is, if you do go through the process of reviewing a determination, just bear in mind, I don't know the relationship of the applicant. Whether if you review it, do you have to have the same applicant? I can't remember that process. We may need to get some additional information to you on that, because you're reviewing an application that's been determined. So I don't know if you can lodge a review with a different applicant, unless that applicant's given approval for that.
I think you'd need a written approval from
Yeah, yeah.
From
I think
your
you just
applicant.
Have to bear in mind.
And as part of that, I mean, currently it is a residential apartment building, but if following this process, if I do request a review and I submit something that's completely different, is that possible?
Yes, it is.
So we had a shake of the head there. We had a yes there.
You would probably be looking at a fresh development application.
Okay, fresh DA.
But you need to be guided by the council planning staff.
Yep.
They'll steer you in the right direction.
Yep.
I think reviews allow you to
Right.
But they need to be
on the existing.
Consistent. I mean, they can be different, but they need to still be relating back to what you originally applied
okay.
for.
Yeah.
So you can make certain changes, but you can't come with a totally different built form.
No, that's fine.
So
that's fine. That appreciate that. That I guess helps me decide what I'll do in the future. Because as my lovely neighbours have said, they're not opposed to a development, so there will be one going up, that's for sure.
And also, just for your knowledge, we're only providing advice on this matter.
Yes.
So
appreciate that. Appreciate that.
Up to council to make the determination.
Are we providing advice or are we deciding on this one?
Advice on this one, I think. Yes, it's advice.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So the council will make the final decision. And the panel will be providing advice.
Appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you.
That concludes item one. We'll move on to item two. Yep. Thank you, Scott. Which is 57 Smith's Lane, Wongawilly. Just so you're all aware of the procedures that the panel operates under, a quorum is three. So one person with a with a conflict still allows the panel to operate. Okay, I have three submitters registered to speak. Stephen McGartland.
Good afternoon. My name is Stephen McGartland, and I live on the corner of Coral Vale Drive and Smith's Lane, directly across the proposed development site. Let me start by saying I enjoy a cappuccino, and I have a child, a grandchild, who may be a potential client of the centre. So in principle, I support the proposal of a compliant development. I have read the council assessment and note a number of the issues raised previously have been addressed. Although as a general comment, I do not believe the noise assessment took into account the natural amphitheatre of the ridge and would request the area up to Dairy Farm Way be included in future noise compliance audits. In addition, I would request further consideration be given to the mitigation of traffic flow and noise, both of which directly relate to the number of children attending the centre. Under the current council planning and design criteria for childcare centres, one of the design objectives, as we know, is to minimise the impact of childcare centres in terms of traffic generation, movement and noise on the residential areas. And to achieve this objective, it is recommended as a criteria that in a residential zone, the maximum capacity of childcare centres shall be restricted to 49 children. The guidelines and criteria for property development are intended to deliver a consistent quality standard for the community. They are developed by experts in the field, and the community expects the council to ensure compliance. We should note that the maximum size for the centre is 49. It is not a minimum of 49. It is not a range of 49-95. It is a maximum of 49 to meet the objectives set by council. Accordingly, I become very concerned when developers feel they can submit applications which exceed the maximum numbers by 80%, then offer a concession, as in this case, by reducing the numbers from 90 to 75, an outcome which still exceeds the maximum number allowed of 49 by a further 50%. How can this approach be considered reasonable? Surely it breaches both the intent and letter of the development criteria. It appears to me to be an illusion of concession, with the developer and the council assessment referring to the reduction from 95 to 72, rather than the fact that it remains currently at 1.5 times larger than that would be expected by the council and under the compliant criteria. I note that the developer indicates the size of the lot is larger than the typical residential lot, and therefore supports a high capacity centre. This may have merit. However, the traffic noise and flow is directly impacted by the capacity of the centre, and this is compounded by the fact that there is a single point of entry and exit on Smith's Lane for all traffic. The traffic noise assessment conducted by used the RTA guide to generating traffic guidelines based on the survey conducted in 1992. I note that both the assessments, along with the developer, express an opinion that the predicted outcomes are conservative or worst-case scenarios. This implies that the resultant traffic and noise will actually be less than that predicted. I would suggest that these opinions are unsubstantiated and are based on the assumption that more children will be walked to the centre than be driven. I hold a counter view that the majority of clients will be working families who will drive their car to the childcare centre before continuing to drive to work. My position is that the RMS guidelines used are still valid in 2019. This is actually supported by a New South Wales Transport Validation Trip Generation Survey for childcare centres conducted in 2015. This validation survey confirmed that the best indicator for traffic generation remains the number of children attending, as in line with the 1992 Traffic and Noise Generation Guidelines. Therefore, the predicted traffic flow and noise is not conservative or worst case, but is the most likely outcome, but remains still 50% higher than a compliant development. Once again, I would argue this outcome is an unreasonable outcome. A copy of the report can be provided to the committee if they so wish. To mitigate this noise issue, I would suggest consideration be given to a secondary exit point, providing one-way traffic flow, entering from Smith's Lane and exiting on the eastern boundary into the Vale development. This would not only deliver traffic flow and noise mitigation solution at compliant levels, it would also improve the safety aspects of the site regards vehicle and people interaction. In summary, I'd make four recommendations to the panel. that both the cafe and the childcare centre need to be subject to a 6-monthly noise compliance audit as part of their licence to operate, and such results be made available to the public. 2, that the noise compliance audits include the natural amphitheatre of the ridge. 3, that any approval of a childcare centre be conditional on separate entry and exit points with one-way traffic flow provided. And 4, that a compliant development be approved under the current maximum capacity of 49, not 72. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Martin O'Donnell. Just while we're waiting, Mr. O'Donnell, I just need to tell you that the panel's role in this is to provide advice to the council, not to make the decision. So the council will make the ultimate decision based on the report and the panel's advice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Martin O'Donnell is my name. I have 4 questions that I'd like to put to the panel in relation to this matter. I understand that there was a contamination report provided and that there were elevated levels of zinc noted in that report. I'd like to know or understand, given that it was, you know, farming and grazing area, whether there was any additional adverse findings on either the ground conditions or any other soil contamination in relation to pesticides or herbicides or any other poisonous or dangerous additives apart from those zinc levels. I'd like to know whether there was a hygienist report completed, given that that is farming and grazing land, or previously farming and grazing land. If there was a hygienist report, is it going to be tabled? If there wasn't a hygienist report completed, why not? The soil contamination report did outline elevated zinc levels, and I note that the developer is only proposing to perform a top cover scrape of the site as required. I'd seek clarification on this process because I'm advised that's not the normal process, particularly in relation to that type of potential or previous contamination. And finally, I'd like to understand whether there was any asbestos found in any of the adjacent buildings, and if so, what the percentage per cubic metre of asbestos was. If there was asbestos found, I'd like to know what the mitigations is going to be, or what mitigation is going to be undertaken to address that. My view is that there was any asbestos found at all, we should be extremely careful given that there is a proposed childcare centre being placed on that site. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Just in relation to contamination issues, the contamination report, and my understanding, is on the public record, so a lot of the answers to your questions should be within the report. But we'll ask the applicant to address those matters. I'm assuming the applicant can address the requirements of the contamination reports. Thank you. The next speaker is Mary Marciano.
Good afternoon. Okay, so our block is actually up on Dairy Farm Way, and as Stephen did mention, there is an amphitheatre sort of sound effect happening, and I do notice it while we're building right now, that we hear dogs barking, we hear all sorts of noises coming from that whole area where the childcare centre is proposed and in the surrounding homes. Obviously I'm here to voice my concerns, but ideally I'd love to see the area remain a heritage area and open for the community. I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately, but I think it would be ideal. It's already been used for Christmas get-togethers. It's been used for cinemas facilities. It's been used for a lot of get-togethers for the community. I think it would be great to see it that way. Obviously, I'm thinking that the council is leaning towards approving a childcare centre, and therefore one of my main concerns is the size of the centre. I'd argue the number of children has already been determined by the current policy, which states a maximum of 49 children in R2 residential areas, and it seems that Ward 3, Councillor Dom Figlermeni, agrees. Unfortunately, he's away, not able to attend, but his email to me reads, "Thanks for the email. While I was aware for the need for childcare centres, I was not aware of the proposed size of this project. It is my view that while there is a council policy on the permitted size for childcare per centre, it is important that as a councillor I support that policy. My view is that the council policy needs to be followed." So therefore he supports that it's a residential area and it should be 49. So as you know, this is the council policy which relates to the section that says the maximum capacity is 49 children. Now, nowhere in there does it say except if the land's a certain size, except if it's a developer, except if. There is no except if in this policy. If we use a developer's reasoning that the land is big enough, then council sets a precedence, then in reality any larger properties could in theory do the same, including those up on the hill and further on Smith's Lane, just because a property is big enough. It's not a sufficient reason for council's planning department to ignore their own policies. Obviously, the size of the centre then follows on to my next issue, which I don't believe has been adequately addressed through all this. Really, the objectives in setting these limits on residential areas, among other things, it specifically states to minimise the impact in terms of traffic generation, movement and traffic noise. Now, as you'd know from visiting today, you'd realise that that is quite a pinch point. We have, while not all the development is has been built as yet, you would know that. Oh, sorry, I'm shaky. It's quite nerve-wracking being up here. That's the entry and enter of the proposed centre, and all this area here, this entire area, funnels through here, as will the Vale, Sanctuary Point, all this area. We have one road in and out. That's it, and it's one lane each way. So if the developer had known that he wanted to do this, why didn't he make this road wider? Why didn't we have other access points? Why is there not some consideration to the area and the residents that they've built here in the community? And this is why. Oh, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong page. So hundreds of lots have been approved. We've only got one way in and out. They've had all these wonderful reports drafted about how people are going to walk and ride their bikes to the centre with their children, you know, the one that's up on the hill, and then drop off the kids and stay for a leisurely coffee. Now, all this also compensates for, apparently, for the shortfall of 3 parking spaces, which again goes against council's own requirements. In reality, the very nature of long daycare centre means the majority of parents will be driving in a rush to drop off and pick up the children on the way to and from work. I also find it ironic that the developers claim the land size big enough to warrant the extra childcare places, but not big enough to fit the required car parking spaces. Is it a question of quantity over quality? The traffic alone, once in all residential lots are built from the Vista Ridge, Vale Hill, Wongawilli and Century Ponds areas, will be quite substantial. I don't believe the report has adequately displayed the foreseeable conditions, and I also believe this is why council's objectives are in place, to not allow the addition of an extra 40% more children that is allowable in residential areas. Should there be a need of an evacuation such as in 2000 for fires or floods which close off these roads, this also needs to be considered. Again, one way in, one way out. Other proposed roads are nothing more than a concept at this stage and could be many years away. Look at Fowler's Bridge Road that's taken, 20 years in the making? As for the need for a centre this large, well, how many centres have or are in the process of being approved in the area of Wongawilli, which is quite ironic seeing as that was mentioned right at the beginning. Bottom line is, this is a commercial size centre in a residential zone. We've also noted that on, okay, so there's a number of 12 staff with cleaners, directors, cooks, casual staff not being mentioned. And we've also believe it's crucial that residents, when choosing one of the biggest investments of their lives, should be able to do so with the confidence in the consistency in the manner in which council administers its own policies. Council and developers have the responsibility to maintain the integrity of the areas they create. And once this is built, the developer's gone. It's just reaping the financial rewards. It's us residents who are directly affected by the centre who then have to live with the issues created. And once it's built, it's too late. So I respectfully ask that the council abides by their own policies and refuse this application at this size.
Thank you. That's all the registered speakers we have from submitters. Is there anybody else who didn't register who wants to speak other than the applicant? No. I have Jeff Borst, Rod Delaharp, Nathan Holloway on behalf of the applicant. Gentlemen, I'm happy for you to make a submission if that's what, if you've prepared something, or perhaps more pointed is if you could respond. And I don't know whether you have your traffic or your environmental scientists here or planner or who you have, Mr. Borst.
There's myself as the architect, and I've prepared a statement.
Yeah.
It looks like some of the concerns are very specific.
Yeah.
And I think my client, who's also the developer, might be able to answer some of those things.
Yeah, I mean, that would be helpful if,
yeah.
if, and I understand you don't have those experts here,
yes.
but so it would be helpful if they can make some sort of comment in response yeah. to the issues.
So, look, I'm the architect, so I'll respond on that level. And... So what I've got here is a background statement. So I'll just read it out, and then we can go from there. Okay. In a few short years, the rural landscape of the Wongawilli village and the West Dapto environs will be gone. But reminders of this past and recent landscape will not be lost. The Sheargold Group, who are the owners of the subject site known as Coral Vale, are also the developers of nearby and adjacent subdivisions to the west, southwest and east of the site. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
All right. They have and are marketing their land releases to reflect the rural qualities that area had provided. This is evident in the design controls and features of residential architectural styles, larger than usual building blocks, names to streets, preservation of natural and built heritage items, colour palette of new homes, and the rural landscape features within new parklands, including streetscape furniture. And so too is this appreciation for the land being developed at the Coral Vale Heritage Site. A defined curtilage has been established and identified in a conservation management plan dated 2015 and updated in 2018. However, the site is larger as proposed by Sheargold and extends further south of the curtilage, which is in the area of the main proposed works, which is the childcare centre. The Coral Vale site was subject to a previous DA consent to preserve and maintain identified heritage items, and which has become the basis for the marketing approach to the planned future land subdivisions. The farmhouse, silo, dairy, feed shed and remaining significant vegetation are now identifiable with any new land releases, and the Sheargold Group's approach and commitment to the preservation of remnant rural heritage. The proposed works will guarantee the future ongoing use of the former farm site and will encourage a community bond with the site by providing a place for recreation, meeting, dining and child minding, and any other activities the committee will invent will want to see in the future. The Sheargold Group engaged specialist consultants to document designs for the future activities at the site. Consultants with experience in Aboriginal, European and natural heritage have provided appropriate reports and responsible design solutions. And other specialists such as acoustic and traffic consultants have provided documentation to successfully address the issues, which will be generated from those activities. Numerous consultations with councils, planning and heritage officers have now resulted in a submission which addresses and satisfies all of council's concerns. Lastly, the Sheargold Group has had an historical commitment in the Wollongong area and has been actively establishing new communities for many decades. They were the original land developer of the Cordell Heights subdivisions in the 1980s. Their stable and futuristic approach to a locality and the future communities has been the mainstay for looking to enhance the amenity of those communities while preserving any stories associated with these sites. The provision of the childcare centre and cafe and further site beautification as proposed is another contribution to the locality and a much desired service to the already established communities and future subdivisions. So that's my statement as a background, that the developer isn't here for the short term. They've been around for a long time, and their commitment to the new land releases, the new subdivisions, the new communities. And that is evident with this site in terms of preserving heritage, so that there's a reminder for future generations that this was once farmland, rural land. So, you know, from a historical, archaeological and architectural perspective, I think that's a big plus. And as this idea of the site being used, being maintained or being used as, for another use, will guarantee the heritage of that site, and hopefully the community will embrace what that site has to offer as a meeting place. And as I said, invent other uses for that site, as for, you know, for picnics or community engagement. As far as the traffic and the acoustics, okay, they're very technical. I can't answer those. But as I said in my report, we've had expert consultants address that. We've had 3 or 4 meetings with council, probably 5 meetings with council, to fine-tune those concerns. So the experts have done what they can. I've done what I can to appreciate that site. I'm an architect. I'm a heritage architect. We've got to retain those stories that site and that whole area had to offer, which is the rural heritage. And I think the development shows that or provides that.
Thank you. Any questions? Larissa?
Okay, so my question in general is, so I think just even if you heard the residents, I think the adaptive reuse of the buildings is probably positive and of a benefit. And so I think in terms of the cafe, the use of that dairy is probably quite a good use and in the public's benefit. I think the concerns, obviously, back to the childcare centre, its scale and its form, and obviously its intensity and the generation of the traffic. My question is, you originally had the centre at 90. I didn't see the amended plans. I've got the final plans. So when you scaled back to 75, did you reduce the bulk of that building? So that was
that
reduced?
That was a planning and also heritage concern, that the bulk and scale was a bit excessive. So we had to deflate the building, a look at the roof lines, brought the roof lines down so they were below the heritage, the built heritage roof lines, particularly the farmhouse. We broke up the roof lines so they weren't just one or two shapes. They were a combination of, say, 4 or 5 shapes. So the building deflated, dropped, and the scale sort of was all broken up. So that was...
Did you do your numbers? Did your numbers come from? Is that the SEP? So you've worked your numbers back to the SEP rather than obviously the DCP, which is encouraging the maximum of 49.
So that building there suits the number that's in the current documents.
Okay.
Can I just ask, what's a SEP?
Right. So it's a state environmental planning policy. So if you read the report does relate back to that policy, and that policy... so it's the SEP for educational establishments and childcare centres developed in 2017. There's a whole lot of guidelines there in respect to numbers of children at a particular facility, and they need to be catered for or to have adequate indoor space for their needs as well as outdoor space and other requirements. So it seems that the applicants probably designed the centre in accordance with that SEP, which is a bit higher order than the local planning controls, the DCP. So I just wanted to understand if from the 90 it came down to the 75, was that a reduction in the built form to achieve that? The other question I had was the Section 94 contributions don't seem to apply to the site. Due to the plan, the way the Wollongong plan or the West Dapto, I think, Section 94 contributions plan. But have you put forward, did the developer ever put forward any works in kind in terms of any works to the roadway to make it safer, looking at what one of the residents suggested, two entries and exits. Anything that I think given that you're getting this site for free, essentially, there's nothing coming back to council out of it. And normally, there are contributions required. Obviously, that hasn't been...
Well, that's a question I could throw over to Rod or Nathan, who are the representatives of the Sheargold Group.
Yes.
Just before you do, you heard that at the basis or the heart of a number of the objections is the expectation that a childcare centre is 49 spaces, and what you know the panel acknowledges that that's a requirement of a development control plan, and the courts have ruled, and indeed the legislation makes it clear that a development control plan is there as a guide only, not a requirement which has to be slavishly complied with. If it was a floor space ratio or something, or a height or something like that in a local environmental plan. What's your response to that? I mean...
I can understand if it was within a suburban type context where you've got houses surrounding the subject site. But I think we've got a very generous area here. It's a few hectares. Okay, it's going to be built around with housing, but I think its location, which is on the southern side of the hillside, there's a road that separates it from to the west of existing housing and to the south of existing. So we took on the idea of there was adequate buffers in terms of roadways, landscaping and open spaces compared to if it was a larger than usual site within a built residential context. So it was that sort of play with, we can understand that, 49, yes, if it's in a residential area, but here where the building's located and the buffers and the separation seem to give us that opportunity to, increasing the numbers or the child numbers.
Thank you.
We went for the maximum, but through consultations with the council, that number was brought back.
Okay, and it was mentioned that there's a shortfall of parking spaces for the childcare centre.
Right. Now this is the dilemma that we were facing. Do we convert that site into a car park, and therefore start destroying the that rural farmhouse sort of feel? The existing driveway there is gravel, and that will remain as gravel. And we all agreed that the car parking should remain as gravel with brick or stone curb and guttering. If there was the need for extra parking, then the overflow parking could be on the grass just near the entrance there for those special occasions. So we didn't want to turn that site into a car park to meet, the complying numbers of cars, but we've got space on there for overflow parking, which seemed to be a reasonable solution to it.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry. So you're not intending on widening the entry?
What was the... Are we
Yeah, we are widening the access handle slightly, and we are also redoing the intersection, so it will be a little bit wider.
Yeah, that was raised at one of our meetings with council, and I think the traffic engineer reassessed that entrance.
Okay, I've just... On these plans, it seems like existing driveway with your cattle grid there, which we passed, but...
Yeah, the existing driveway, but it's been enlarged and whatever.
Okay, yeah. I'll look at that, yeah.
My understanding of the traffic implementation is there's going to be stop signs facing the development, and I think the cattle grid remains, or it's going to be expanded.
Yeah.
Okay.
How difficult would it be to actually put in another three spaces to increase it 2 to 37 car spaces?
I don't think that would be any issue. We had extra spaces there, but when we reduced the size of the childcare centre, we took some off. So I think if extra spaces can go in, that can be accommodated.
Okay.
We didn't want to make the car parking dominate that site there. So as I said, it's gravel, it's stone, curb and guttering. It's got that sort of heritage, rural sort of aspect about no curb and guttering, and no concrete and bitumen.
No.
Yeah. And very informal.
If you did have to reduce the number of children from the 75 to 49, what impact would that have?
All right, I'm going to throw that one over to...
Okay, well, perhaps it's time to change chairs.
I'm sort of being guided by the requirements of the client I suppose the numbers there, because that is a growing area, that there will probably be a call for it, a need for it, you know, young families in that growth area there. So that's probably a good reason to sort of have a good number there. The childcare centre and the cafe will also provide income to help maintain the site. The heritage buildings, the existing vegetation, so and enhancing that. So there will be a financial benefit to the site to preserve heritage.
So you would require more children to attend to increase that income.
Once again,
it might be time to change seats with the owner applicant. Sorry. If you want to both come up together, that's fine. We'll get another chair for you, and perhaps just introduce yourselves and maybe start with Larissa's question.
My name is Rod Delahab. I'm the property and leasing manager.
And I'm Nathan Holloway, the development manager. Look, I might just jump on to a couple of points that Jeff probably didn't cover. And by no means, I'm not a contamination expert, nor am I a traffic expert. I sort of rely on the consultants for that, what they've come up with. Just on a couple of the points, the zinc issue, I do know the report stated that the Douglas Partners found that the zinc was just coming off the roof. We have opted to remove that and replace that with something similar, so that isn't an issue. As for a hygienist report, I can't speak to that. As far as I'm aware, we didn't undertake one. It wasn't required. I'm sure if it was required, we would be happy to do that. And asbestos, there was definitely no asbestos noted. Again, if it had been identified, we would have taken whatever measures were required. In the next 6 to 9 months, we are undertaking a whole set of remediation works across this site and our corresponding site, the Vale. Those works will be checked by a site auditor, so we'll be following all the proper protocols and procedures to ensure the necessary soil is fine and will suit what we're trying to do. As for traffic, Jeff covered the sort of three-spot deficit and that we do have an overflow space if it was required. As for having a separate access on the eastern side as a sort of one-way in, one-way-out sort of thing, it certainly was considered. However, the eastern side of that site will be lowering substantially from its current level, and that's to do with our Vale project. So really making a second or a one-way access out of that side is not really feasible. I can't remember the exact height distance, but it has to be over a metre. It just was not. Yeah, and we'd be running an access that would have to then go off alignment around the current homestead to try and make that work. So that's hence the, we've tried to upgrade the intersection. We have stop signs trying to make it as safe as possible. Section 94s, the West APTO Section 94 contribution plan is fairly substantial. We're already paying upwards of $35,000 a lot. We've already, we've established a beautiful park there that was over seven figures to build. There's riparian corridor that's all, you know, we've established that as well. That was, again, very expensive and has 3, 4, 5 years worth of maintenance that we're going to be doing to that as well. So I think we've really put in to Vista Park. It's, you know, one of the more pleasing sites in our opinion, but obviously we're biased.
There's no Section 94 contributions that apply to this development.
It's
not a choice. Legally, there's no Section 94 plan that requires you to make contributions. Is that right?
Correct, yes. Yeah.
Thank you. I just wanted to clear that up.
Yeah. Look, one other thing I will add. Sheargold, you know, we've had the homestead for the last 15 years, or this site in particular. You know, we have no intention of getting rid of it. We are actually, you know, we have what are called integrated sites throughout our development. We retain a number of those, so we stay involved. You know, we put on events. We're there for the long run. We're certainly not doing this, building it, and then flicking it. We will most definitely be doing it. We will both most definitely be keeping it, rather.
Okay, that still doesn't quite address the car parking spaces and also the number of children.
Right. So the car spaces, so we have a deficit of 3.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we certainly could provide those 3 if it was required.
Well, how difficult would it be?
It wouldn't be that difficult. We do have the space for it, of course.
Okay.
Again, it was more balancing, you know, trying to ensure that the as much of the site remains as it is without building additional car spots.
Just in relation to the car parking, there's basically going to be 3, if this development's approved, there's going to be 3 separate car parks on site, one for the childcare centre, one for the cafe, and one for the sales centre, visitor centre. Is there going to be, I'm assuming that there'd be sharing of those car parking spaces if necessary.
You'd imagine so, given, you know, the different times of the peak use times. Part of the thinking in terms of providing more car spaces, it wasn't a matter of minimising, but there'll be crossover times where, you know, the car spaces might not be used for the bulk of the day, only at certain times, mostly in the morning, and then pick up in the afternoon. So staff, you know, if there's more spaces needed, there'll be spaces during the day that can be used. In terms of the 3 spaces, it's not a big deal to provide them. It was just trying to, you know, meld the heritage aspect of the site, as Jeff mentioned earlier, and perhaps have more, you know, green space, more landscape than 3 car spaces. But in terms of providing them, there would be no issue providing them if that was something that was recommended.
Okay, and what about the number of children going from 49 to 70, 75? 75, yeah.
Well, in the whole process of the site, we've, you know, had regard to the site itself in terms of what was approved in the original development application for a building envelope, which can accommodate a building that size, is one element. Our driver is to provide a facility for the community that can provide as many numbers of children to supply that need as we see it, and in our discussions with you know, parties that may be running the centre.
And what impact would it have then if you had to go back to 49 children? What impact would that have?
Oh, look, I'd have to look at the feasibility in finer detail, but there's a you know, balancing point in all the factors I've mentioned, and also, you know, the return in terms of the income to be derived from that, and we also have entered into an agreement on a positive covenant on the site to maintain the site.
Mm.
And, you know, we have to derive an income from that to be able to to maintain the site. To reduce the numbers would impact that, and you know, ultimately the viability.
Right. What were the figures? Was it over a 5-year?
10 years.
Ten years.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? You
know? Yeah, I think it was up to about 10,000 a year. Yeah, the maintenance.
That's on with 75.
No, that's to maintain the site.
Yeah. Oh, to maintain the site.
Mm-hmm. There's also, as I understand it, there's a conservation management plan,
yes,
which this development is tied to. Yes. So it's not just about maintenance.
No.
There's additional costs to, I think the silo needs restoration.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And some other things. So
the other contribution from the numbers side of it is when you know, there's a cash flow element that arrives in bettering the site, which is a community asset at the end of the day.
Mm.
And if you've known the Sheargold Group, how long we've been around, we want to do that and open up the site to the community. And there's got to be a commercial element that, you know, enables that to happen.
Mm.
Thanks, Edgar.
Okay, thank you.
Larissa, did you have any other questions? Was your question fully answered?
Yeah. Oh, I just want to ask one more. You might not be able to help me with this because I've just noticed it now. Is your parking numbers including the existing parking that's for the heritage building? Because it seems the numbers include that parking.
I believe it does, yes.
Right, okay, thank you.
Okay, no further questions. Is there anything else that you wanted to say?
No, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. That concludes item two. People who are here for item two, you're welcome to stay for the rest of the items, but there'll be no more discussion on this item, so there's no need for you to stay. Item three, 178 to 180 Lawrence Hargrove Drive, the rule. We'll just give people a chance to make their way out. Now, the panel, just so it's clear, is being asked to make the decision in relation to this. This item, as opposed to providing advice. Now, we don't have any speakers registered other than the applicant, but I see there's quite a few people here, so I find it a little unusual that we don't have any registered speakers. But could people indicate, before you come forward, could people indicate by a show of hands who is here, who wishes to speak? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Did you register?
There was going to be a group registration done by somebody. we met in preparation for this, and someone's going to submit the names of the people speaking. So that one person.
It didn't happen. Okay. No. All right. We won't hold that against you. What I might do before the first person speaks, so we're clear, if we can start with your name.
Jane Bunting.
Jane Bunting.
We were going to be speaking as a group, so then there was going to be Erin Bunting.
Right.
And Vivian Bunting.
Yep.
Amanda Coombs. Lisa Crawford.
Matt Mallon. Lisa Crawford. Hang on, can't write that fast. Matt.
Alan.
Yep. And your name?
Murray.
So as a person who didn't put the list in here, are they going to put their hand up, the person who slipped up? It's you two. Okay, all right, so we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 speakers, and you're speaking on something a little different?
Yes.
Oh, good. Thank you. Okay. Now, do you have an order that you want to speak in? Is that the order you gave me? Okay, so Jane Bunting is the first speaker. Thank you. And if you can, and each of you, if you can start with your address. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Jane Bunting. and I reside at 182 Lawrence Hargrave Drive on the southern border of the proposed development. I live there in my childhood home with my husband and my two children. I'd like to start by stating very clearly that I'm not opposed to development and welcome the demolition of the two old buildings, hopefully before they collapse on their own, and replaced with something that complies with the rules of development and is sympathetic to its surroundings. I've raised several concerns regarding the proposed development in writing at each time the proposal was on public display. This evening I'm going to focus on the retaining wall, contamination and suitability of the site. The retaining wall between our property and 180 was erected to contain the soil that was slipping from 180 onto our property. A letter from council was written to the previous owners about the need for retaining the land in 2012. The retaining wall was finally constructed in August 2017. I've read the engineer's report that accompanied the DA, which states that the wall is satisfactory for its intended use, so long as no additional pressure be exerted upon it. I've also read that the piers would be such as to not add any weight along to the wall along the driveway, but was the removal of the old retaining wall between 178 and 180 taken into consideration? Also, the fact that the machinery, building supplies, etc., etc., would inevitably be adding weight and pressure whilst the project was being constructed. Another major issue I have with the wall is that it isn't wooden. The longevity of a wooden retaining wall is approximately 15 years. Considering that the wall is under constant pressure, being at the bottom of Kennedy's Hill, and it is always damp due to the constant downward flow of water to get to Kelly's Creek, a natural waterway may be even less than 15 years. So what happens when it fails? It's not a joint wall, it is completely within the boundary of 180, so how exactly would it be repaired or replaced? In a worse outcome, the building and the land could very well end up on our property. It's no secret that the entire side of Kennedy's Hill is moving, and that can be evidenced by the other retaining walls uphill. All these concerns were raised with the last DA, but have still remained unanswered. The next very major issue is the contamination on the proposed site. I read the report contained within the DA stated that the fill, which extends the entire length of 180 and into the property by as much as one third of the overall block to a depth greater than 2 metres, is indeed contaminated. It is contaminated with asbestos and unacceptable levels of lead. Their own report stated that this fill should be removed during any future works on the property and replaced with clean fill. I read the council's recommendations that were provided to the panel this evening and agree with the remediation of the land, but I remain sceptical if this would indeed happen. As it is already, the tons and tons of contaminated fill that was removed when the retaining wall between our property and that of 180 was constructed, it was used to infill another of their properties, 208 to 210 Princess Highway, Bulleye. At this time, they may have been unaware of the high lead levels, but they were certainly aware of the asbestos, as approximately 350 to 400 kilos of asbestos was removed from the boundary line alone. So with the little regard that they have shown for public health and safety and the laws of the land, I'm not convinced that the right thing would be done. Considering that council are aware of the use of the contaminated fill and have not intervened in any way, it only solidifies my scepticism. The third and final point I would like to address is the suitability of the land for development. Following the last panel hearing, dated the 1st of August 2018, the panel determination and statement of reasons stated that the DA failed to demonstrate that the site is suitable for the development. This issue is not adequately addressed in this current DA. The only reference to the suitability refers to the land being suitable to continue for residential use. Considering that variations are sought on both blocks as neither are wide enough for dual occupancy, and being that the land comprises of two filled sloping blocks at the bottom of a hill, bordering land that is zoned a flood zone with a natural waterway, Kelly's Creek, approximately 25 metres away, where is the documentation to support the land's structural integrity? Can the land support the development? Have tests been carried out to show the rate and degree of movement? I could not find any of this contained within the documentation that was displayed. I've read the council's recommendations to the panel and not only disagree with the recommendation to approve this DA, but I'm not sure as to why this recommendation is almost completely opposite to the recommendations put forward for the previous DA, considering that it is the same block of land and the same footprint remains and the footprint remains virtually unchanged, even though the number of units has been reduced by one. So I thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Next speaker is Erin Bunting. and Brother William.
Good evening. My name is Erin and I'm 15 years old and I too reside at 182 Lawrence Hargrave Drive, Thrill. Tonight I will also be speaking on behalf of my brother, Tate, who is 12 years old. We have a few concerns we would like to address as we feel these issues would affect us if the development was to take place. Firstly, I would like to address the issue of overshadowing and how it will affect not just me but the whole family. Due to the enormous size of the building, it being only 1.35 metres from the boundary and already almost one storey above our property, it would act like a three-storey building. In this case, my bedroom would receive next to no natural lighting, allowing all my indoor plants to suffer, and I would need to have my light on more often. In fact, the whole backyard would mostly be in shadow in winter, affecting all of our animals and plants. Our solar hot water system would also be affected. This is an issue that we're both concerned with. We don't want our fruit trees, vegetable gardens, chickens or our bees to suffer. The next issue is privacy or lack of. The design of this one compared to the last one is better as none of the units are directly looking at us. This said though, the first unit would be very close to us and looking down on us, my bedroom window and our bathrooms. I'd feel very uncomfortable in my room knowing that people could easily be looking down on me. I spend a lot of time in my room as I have a lot of surgery, up to 11 surgical procedures a year. I've always considered my room my comfortable place and I feel that if this development happens, this would change. With there being 12 bedrooms in the plans, that is a lot of people looking into our yard, looking at our washing on the line, looking into our windows and watching us in our backyard. Mum said that there would be a fence on the retaining wall, but only 1.5 metres high, easy enough to see over, especially as they are already a lot higher than us. Tate often plays in the backyard with his friends and with the neighbours' children. He, as well as the neighbours' children, have said that they would feel awkward being watched. This potential development, along with previous potential developments, has caused our family a great deal of stress, with our mum and dad having to spend plenty of time reading lots of information and writing submissions. Our mum has been unwell during this time and it upsets both of us that she is under all of this extra stress. We think that a new building would be great next door, but we had to stick to the rules for our extension and other people should have to stick to the rules too. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening.
Thank you. The next speaker is Amanda. Oh, sorry, I thought William was already here. That was Toby, was it?
Tate.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tate. I thought you were William. Hi, Tate. Okay, so you're Mr. Bunting?
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And you're all speaking right on behalf of William?
I am.
And yourself?
Yes,
no doubt.
Me, myself,
thank you.
And I.
Okay.
Okay. Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. My name is William Bunting and I also reside at 182 Lawrence Hargrave Drive. I'd like to also state very clearly that I'm not opposed to the site being developed and would welcome an appropriate structure that complies with a visual amenity that is the rural village. This evening I'm going to address car parking traffic. I have read the report presented by Council for this evening's meeting and note that the RMS had no issues with the extra traffic. But looking on this issue from a resident's perspective, there are huge issues. The current DA proposes single car garages for each of the four units and a single uncovered car space for each unit at the rear of the properties. Inadequate to say the least, especially if the garage is used for storage of properties such as bikes, surfboards, kayaks, fishing gear, etc. The applicant stated in their own proposal that a shared driveway would maximise street parking. Lawrence Hargrave Drive is a very busy road, being the only road in and out of Thirroul and much of the northern suburbs. On weekends, as it is, we very rarely drive anywhere due to large amounts of traffic that is quite often bumper to bumper and barely moving. Actually, this seems to be the case not only on weekends, but happens in afternoons as well, with traffic virtually at a standstill backed up over Kennedy's Hill. This is only exacerbated when bypass is closed. There's no stopping area just up the hill, which extends approximately 250 metres from Thirroul into Ostermere, and bus stops on either side of the road at the bottom of Kennedy's Hill, so approximately another 80-odd metres of no stopping. So imagine what the effect of another 10 to 14, possibly even more cars parked on the road could do. There'd be many more cars parking... There would be many more cars attempting to enter and exit from the heavy flow of traffic. The parked cars would be blocking visual field of residents attempting to do the same. The amount of extra cars parked could potentially block driveways, as seen around many other multi-dwelling areas, and as reported by local area, residents in the immediate area. Thirroul and Ostermere have many pedestrians, enough for council to install another footpath on the western side of Lawrence Hargrave Drive. These pedestrians would be difficult to see around such a large number of parked cars for people turning in and out of the driveways. The closest designated crossings are at Ostermere Shops or at Thirroul Shops, many crossing the road along Kennedy's Hill, predominantly in the area around our home to get to and from the beach. Pedestrians would have to stand out on the road to enable them to see oncoming traffic, putting them at risk. These pedestrians are children going to and from school, elderly people walking their dogs, and any number in between. As Lawrence Hargrave Drive is a scenic drive, there are a vast number of cyclists using this stretch of road, Tour Lagong, City de Gong bike ride for an example. The cycleway is advertised on council's website. Kennedy's Hill has unfortunately been the scene of many car bicycle accidents, with one many years ago resulting in the death of a cyclist from a resident attempting to exit this driveway. This collision, type of collision has happened again quite recently, fortunately, not resulting in death. As vision would be obscured from the extra parked cars, this could indeed happen again. It is not uncommon to hear the constant sirens of emergency vehicles racing past our home. As I stated earlier, Lawrence Hargrave Drive is the only road to much of the northern suburbs, and the extra street parking would undoubtedly pose a problem to emergency services. It would be hard enough to race to emergency without the added burden of vehicles being unable to pull over due to unnecessary parked cars. The extra noise from all these cars would inevitably cause upset to local residents. Yes, Lawrence Hargrave is constantly busy, but not with doors opening and closing, car engines starting and people chit-chatting as they get in out of the cars. All these cars would need to be washed on the cement driveway. There's no grassed area for this. This would mean that all chemicals, residues and potential grease and oils would flow directly into Kelly's Creek via the current drainage system without any filtration that would normally occur when washing on grass. This is to say that runoff would flow directly into the containment pit and possibly flow over the retaining wall onto our property, as this would happen also in flash flooding or if the pit had reached capacity. All runoff ends up on Thirroul Beach. I understand that Council reviews each DA as a single entity, but traffic conditions in direct correlation to current infrastructure should be looked at upon in a much broader light. It is unacceptable that council reviews each individual individually. 13 cars here, 10 there, 15 another. At what point do we draw the line? I know that the extra 13 cars next door to me would undoubtedly cause extra pressure on already drowning Lawrence Hargrave Drive. As it is, cars turning into and exiting their properties is fraught with danger. We make it a point to drive around the block to enter our property rather than stop traffic flowing south as we turn into our driveway.
Are you close to summing up?
I am.
Thank you.
Basically, the paragraph. This stops the very real possibility of being rear-ended. Lawrence Hargrave Drive is the main artery of northern suburbs. It cannot cope with added parked cars or even much more traffic. Single dwellings being replaced with multi-dwelling units only serves to compound the existing problem and detract from what is characteristically Thirroul. I have read the report presented to Council in regards to this DA. I disagree with Council's recommendation to approve this DA in its current form. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak this evening.
Thank you. Now, the next speaker is Amanda, and because I wrote so quickly, I can't read your surname.
It's Amanda Coombs, who has emailed me first. She's actually a bit sick. Is that
okay if I read for her? Perhaps if you can just table it and we'll read it after the meeting, that'd be good. Thank you. Lisa Crawford.
Lisa Crawford, 176 Lawrence Hargrave Drive, Thirroul. So I'm here to represent the Crawford family, but more broadly our iconic Thirroul village. And I want to stress that it is a village. It's not a high-density suburb of Sydney or a new subdivision out west. But before I start, I'd like to concur with the previous speakers and state that we share their concerns, especially those regarding the danger of extra cars parked on Lawrence Hargrave Drive and the risk of accidents caused by poor vision when leaving the driveways of our homes. But obviously, to avoid repetition, I'll just be speaking on the issues of privacy, security and lifestyle. With the development of four dwellings only 1.5 metres from the boundary and on only approximately 1,300 square metres, just over a quarter of an acre block, we believe that our privacy and, in turn, our lifestyle will be severely compromised. The proposed development has windows facing directly into our living areas, and so without any provision for deep soil planting of tall trees along the fence line or at the back of the property, we'll be faced with neighbours and their guests having an unobscured view into our private lives. And to complicate matters, the proposed deep soil area apparently has a main sewer pipe running through it. Now, this is a radical shift from the current fibro dwelling next door, which cannot see into our living areas. We will be confronted with residents and their guests looking into areas we currently regard as sanctuaries, where we move freely in our dining room, sunroom and lounge room, where we socialise and carry out our home office duties without our privacy being invaded. There will be no large trees screening us from them. Instead, we will be in the view of onlookers who wish to watch us. It won't be a matter of closing blinds in the evening. This is a fair expectation. Rather, we will be compelled to close blinds every hour of the day we're at home. The concrete driveway of 176A Lawrence Hargrave Drive is built along the boundary, so it's impossible to make provisions for tree planting on our side of the fence. Now, I realise the revised plans have included a vertical garden or vertical garden screening, but these things are easily dismantled by residents who do not want to bother with maintenance. A lot of them require pump systems. If they don't, they require or they rely on rainfall. Once the vertical garden starts to die, it's unlikely that people are going to replace plants when they know that they can be getting, a bit of an outlook from their windows. So I don't see that as a solution. Our northeastern perspective is viewed from bedrooms that are only a metre or so from the boundary and 2 metres from the neighbouring house on 174 Lawrence Hargrave Drive, which means that curtains must already be drawn for privacy purposes. Our rumpus room at the back of the house is only a metre from the boundary and 2 metres from the northwestern dwelling of 176A Lawrence Hargrave Drive. So essentially, from every direction, we're hemmed in by buildings that prevent privacy. So, we consider that the one remaining Western perspective, access from our dining room, lounge room and sunroom, to be vital for our privacy and aesthetic needs. So to summarise, we think we have three major issues that warrant the refusal of this DA. Firstly, on the issue of safety, we will be in the view of residents of the new development and will not feel safe enough to walk around our home. Secondly, on the issue of health, we will be forced to close our blinds for the entire day, and on top of the overshadowing problems discussed by Erin, which might not affect us as much, we'll be deprived of direct sunlight as a consequence of having the blinds drawn. And thirdly, on the issue of lifestyle, we'll lose our escarpment view and any incentive to spend time in living areas for which we have paid dearly. You need to have the blinds open to be able to see the escarpment. The four dwellings do not leave enough room for a substantial garden, so that disrupts our quality of life. We need a development with dedicated tree space along our southwestern fence line. That's the northeastern fence line of 178 Lawrence Hargrave Drive.
You're close to finishing up.
Yep, and in the backyard area. I just think the developer needs to take into account the trauma that such a massive lifestyle change would cause. And finally, I just think that we need to consider that this is a really important time in our history. Thirroul has some disastrous developments already. Let's not continue that practice. Let's, you know, forge ahead and make progress, but environmentally and socially responsible progress. We want the Illawarra to be a proud city and a model for communities around Australia. So please help save Lawrence Hargrave Drive and Thirroul by refusing this development application.
Sorry, can I ask, are you at 176 or 176A?
We're 176.
So you don't actually adjoin your house. There's a driveway between the boundary and how wide is that driveway?
Oh, it's...
Three metres?
Yes, about 3 metres.
So you've got your house, that's about a metre off the driveway at the closest point, and you've got 3 metres of driveway, then the boundary, then the new development. There's an existing fibro house which is actually closer to the boundary on 178 than what's being proposed. What are the windows along that side?
There's no viewing area.
Well, are there any windows along there?
No, not the ones that are there. I think there's a bedroom window.
There are windows
kind of
there.
below fence level.
Okay.
But seriously, the driveway, when we moved there, we didn't own the whole block. It was already subdivided.
Yeah.
Is concrete. It's impossible.
That's on your property, so
no. That's on 176A.
It's not 178. It's not controlled by the.
No, no. But what I'm saying is, I would plant a garden there if I had any power to do so. But because I don't have any power to do so, and that's the only area where we have space to actually view anything, we need some sort of consideration for the fact that. You know, yes, it's 3 metres, but these people are going to be looking into our only living area with space to view.
But you've got bedroom windows already looking into your property, have you not?
No.
Didn't you say there's bedroom windows in the existing?
They're obscured by the fence line. They're almost underground. So that there's a fence and there it's currently, it's a tiny little window. It's nothing like the development.
I wanted to ask which windows of the development are you concerned about? Because you mentioned windows looking into your property. Can you tell me which windows from this development is affecting you directly in terms of direct overlooking?
It would be the windows facing northeast. So
all of them?
Well, if you look at the plans, you see that they look into... our southwestern.
No, there's windows. This development is cutting into the site, my understanding, and that'll be confirmed, obviously, by the applicant. So it's going lower. The floor levels is going to be substantially lower than what you're experiencing at the moment.
But it's two stories.
Correct. So the upper level of this new addition, so the bottom levels where the windows are going to be more obscured by the fencing because they're going to be lower than whatever window you've got currently. The upper level where the living room, there is, from my understanding, one window that is towards the front of the property. There is no window, and I'll get that confirmed. I can see on the plan here. So I'm trying to understand which windows you're specifically alluding to that are overlooking your property.
Well, I could show you on the plans if you'd like me to come over. I just don't have a plan here, sorry. Can you just
probably
show
best if you come over and show us.
Hang on a minute. Sorry, I don't even have glasses with me.
Because I'm at a loss too to understand.
So I'm here. Hang on, I've got to. So. So that's the middle driveway on the new property. I'm here. Yeah. So look. Yeah. It's the windows. Look, I wish I had studied the drawings today, but I can see that it's the windows. I think they're the bedroom windows. I'm not sure, but they're the windows that look into. They're northeast facing.
And they're on the ground floor, the bedroom windows.
So you're saying there's no second story windows at all?
No. There's one window only, I think. We'll ask the applicant to address this, but there's one window at the front on the side, beside the balcony, and I'm assuming that's a highlight window.
Yeah, so there's a high level.
And if it's not, we'll probably ask them to do it if it's to be approved.
The one window that is looking effectively north east is actually in front of the building line.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
But I understand that, but you can actually still see back into our living area from there, and that's the issue. I'd be fine if you could plant a garden along the side, if you could move, 3 metres and provide some sort of green space. I'm certainly not opposed to development per se.
Hmm.
We need to assess what the direct impact is on you. That's what we need to do. And because you've raised a concern about privacy, we need to be satisfied totally that this is going to have a detrimental impact in terms of privacy and overlooking. Yeah. Is your living spaces at the front of the house?
Yes.
So what's at the back of the house, the bedrooms?
So the back of the house is the kitchen.
Yes.
And... The house is really only two bedrooms in length.
Yep.
And then there's a separate rumpus room, if you like, an addition that was built in the 70s. And so it's really both the sunroom, dining room and lounge room.
Towards the front.
Through that glass area that looks through to 178's window area.
Right. So okay. We just need to look at that front.
And what makes you think that people would rather look out that window into your yard than look out the big window over the balcony to the ocean? I mean,
obviously, we could end up with great neighbours, but the likelihood is that... Well, it's not an issue of whether it will happen. It's the potential for it to happen.
Okay.
And I think that while ever... I'm not going to know... Who's going to be buying that property? I'm not, I don't think I should have to just hope that I'll be okay and that my family will be okay. If there's the potential for something that forms your quality of life to be taken away and you're saying, hey, all I need is tall trees, like a proper garden area, not a vertical garden and not... little pot plants, little shrubs in pots. I think that's very reasonable.
Yep. Okay, we understand.
Thank you.
The next speaker is Matt Mallon. Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't see it either.
Good evening, panel. Matthew Mallon. I live at 187 Lawrence Hargrave Drive. That's about four doors up and across the road. And we've been there for around 10 years. And I'm here to support all the rest of the residents that would be negatively impacted if this development were to be approved. Lawrence Hargrave Drive simply is not a compliant location for this type of multi-dwelling development. If I could talk about streetscape. The first DA, council came back and said, look, it's inconsistent with the existing and the desired future character of the locality and the potential to result in significant adverse impacts on the amenity of the surrounding area. So they gave it a thumbs down. So the development was rehashed. They went from 5 units to 4 units, but it's still roughly the same animal. Now council have changed their position a little bit. Oh, they think it's fine now. It's not considered to be inconsistent with the character of the area. And in the council's document, they've provided some images of actual neighbouring addresses trying to support that it's not inconsistent. The first one being at 199 Lawrence Hargrave Drive. That doesn't help their case. That's a single dwelling. The next case they presented was number 4 Henley Road, that multi-unit dwelling. That's not on Lawrence Hargrave Drive. That doesn't support their argument. 195 Lawrence Hargrave Drive. These old townhouses were approved many, many years ago under outdated regulations. It probably wouldn't even be approved under the current regulations. 2A Mountain Road. That doesn't support their argument. That's a single dwelling. Number 2, Jones Lane. Not only is it not on Lawrence Hargrave Drive, but it too is a single dwelling. 162 Lawrence Hargrave Drive. It's a single dwelling. Doesn't support their argument that their type of development should be allowed on this street. Furthermore, with the Thurl Village Centre, there's the DCP. They talk about the village. Residences will retain the architectural character of the proximity, and the views to the ocean will be maintained. This development does not retain that architectural character. The D12 in the DCP talks about ocean views and views to Kennedy Hill. You know, Kennedy Hill is an important place in Thurl. This is going to change the look of that if it were to be approved. Look, I'm just going to double down on the cars and the parking because I feel the pain of these residents every day. It's a struggle to find a parking spot in the afternoons when everybody's coming home from work. There is limited parking. Matt spoke about the no stopping zone, the 2 bus zones. We are fighting for car spaces in the evenings. Lawrence Hargrave Drive, it's just a major just bus route. Yes.
Why is it that you don't park on your own properties?
Why
is there all this on-street parking? I don't understand.
Because we have multiple cars.
So you don't have enough on-street spaces, off-street spaces.
That's right.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I was just That's curious.
Right. Yeah, no, our property could accommodate 2 like these developments, but I'm a single dwelling. These guys are proposing 4 units. That's a lot more cars, a lot more people. That's 12 bedrooms you want to add to the congestion that's already there. There was a car accident not 6 weeks ago out the front of this proposal, rear-ender. Just before Christmas, a cyclist collided into the driver's door of Jordan. He lives across the road at number 170. Bike was wrecked, car door wrecked, medical attention for the cyclist. It's a bus route. It's a transport route. It's the only road through town linking Sydney and Thurl, Wollongong. In the evenings, it's a racetrack where the locals, when it's really quiet, they like to fly around. You can add all these cars out there. If the developer wants to do multi-dwelling units, find a compliant site. Do it in the back streets and side streets. Don't do it on Lawrence Hargrave Drive because it doesn't tick enough boxes. The development may tick some boxes for compliance, but there's plenty of boxes that it doesn't tick, and that's enough for you guys to refuse it. If the development goes ahead, you can't go backwards. It's there forever. That's all I've got. Thanks for listening.
Thanks very much. The last speaker before we hear from the applicant is Murray Jones.
Firstly, let me thank you for this opportunity to speak on this issue. My name is Murray Jones. I live at 43 Fords Road, Thirroul. I'm the secretary of the Thirroul Village Committee. We're a group of residents with an interest in the future of the Thirroul. If Thirroul, we have no mandate except for the 27 people who attended the last meeting. Now, it's obvious that this
Ask you what that means. You have no mandate.
I can't claim to represent the people of Thirroul.
Okay. Thank you. But you are involved in the village committee.
The village committee, yes.
So on that basis, you probably can say that you are in somewhat of a representative.
We have a membership of 107.
Of residents, yeah.
And that's all we can claim, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but you don't specifically say that you speak on behalf of everybody
that's
in the
rule.
Okay,
yeah,
and that's understood. Thank you for clarifying that.
No worries, okay. Okay, now it's obvious that the existing dwellings on the land in question have reached their end of life, and a new use for the land that meets the rules of the Wollongong Local Environment Plan has to be considered. Now, the Wollongong Local Environment Plan, or WLP for short, has 8 distinct aims. The 7th aim is to ensure that the development is consistent with the constraints of the land and can be appropriately serviced by the infrastructure. Now, the current DA appears to me have 4 significant flaws in the way it addresses the constraints of the land. Its foundations go into clay on a slope that has a proven history of slippage. Terminating that slippage is a fragile wooden wall underpinned by a floodplain. The building is relatively huge to its neighbours, elevated on the south side of a hill, thus accentuating overshadowing. The design appears to encourage on-street parking, with a busy road with limited parking. In my opinion, it would be better to have 3 units across the slope as before, or the buildings across the slope as before, but the garage is built under the buildings into the bedrock, thus setting the whole building into the hill, thus minimising overshadowing and the whole structure acting as a retaining wall. Parking would be a simple drive in directly into the garage. Getting out would be the reverse across a wide driveway. There would be minimal load on the retaining wall, and I think this style of configuration would better contribute to meeting the requirements of the WLEP. Let's consider the second part of the aim of the WLP. Is this land appropriately serviced by the infrastructure? Okay, at the last WLPP meeting I attended 1 month ago today, the result gave results in what I consider to be an excellent decision, and I thank you for that. The decision ended with a note acknowledging that the existing traffic conditions experienced in Thirroul, as witnessed here by several people here tonight. Now, I won't read that out, but suffice to say that the panel suggested that a holistic review should be facilitated by council into the road network. Well, I can say that that has not happened. Okay. Possibly in partial response, council, in its current report to the WLPP, states or acknowledges that there are existing traffic congestion problems in the northern suburbs of Thirroul and Thirroul generally. This is a broader issue which is considered as a separate matter to the consideration of this development application, and actions to address these issues are being considered by the WL, are being considered by Council and the RMS. So are they being considered? Okay. About 12 months ago, this copy from the Mercury dated 7th of 2nd, 18, and where the article journalist covers it, the article, while announcing public workshops on canvassing ideas for improved traffic flow, that's Wollongong City Council, in announcing a public workshop on canvassing ideas for improved traffic flow, and thus using these discussions with the RMS, Wollongong City Council announced that the RMS are in the process of preparing the Thirroul to Unanderra network strategy, which is expected to include the traffic choke Thirroul CBD due to be released in 2018. So that was last year. Then on the Mercury dated 5th of the 11th, 18, about 4 months ago, it stated the Thirroul to Unanderra network strategy, started in 2017, was scrapped in favour of the new RMS Illawarra Shoalhaven future transport plan. And this has not yet started, according to the spokesman. And as I read the Mercury every day, I can assure you that as of today, There is no evidence or announcement of any action to address any of these traffic issues, nor is there any evidence to indicate that anything will be done in the near future. So I think there's clear evidence in the public domain which indicates that Wollongong City Council is deceiving the WLPP. Let's look at the real problem. It's really straightforward. The single road in, single road out. One lane in, one lane out, which all traffic has to use. It's reached its capacity. It's pretty obvious there's only three possible options: widening Lawrence Hay Drive, connecting some alternate road, or put a hold on new development. It is fair to say that these options are totally independent of Bulleye or Unanderra or Shoalhaven. I think it's also fair to say that Council needs to make the first step, because the two choke points on Lawrence Hargrave Drive are major bridges that would be expensive to widen relative to the solutions involving Council roads. These problems can be tricky, but this style of problem has occurred before, and we need a solution before the traffic gridlock leads to a tragedy. As the WLPP is the consent authority, we're obliged to act on DAs according to the WLEP, and I think it can be shown that that the DA on this land is not appropriately serviced by the infrastructure. Would it be possible for the WLPP to consider temporarily holding this and similar developments until something is done?
Thank you. One question. What infrastructure are you referring to when you say it doesn't have the infrastructure?
Okay, the blockages on the road.
Roads.
The roads itself, yeah.
Not referring to sewer or water or anything else, or power,
no.
Or...
No, just I'm afraid they're all quite good.
All right, thank you. Before we hear from the applicant, and I'm sure the applicant's going to have a lot to say in response to some of the matters that have been raised, I just want to make a comment about the panel decision at the other Thurule development recently, and I was the chair of that panel when the decision was made. A couple of things about that. Firstly, in response to the last speaker, just because it's not in the Mercury doesn't mean it's not happening. Lots of things happen that aren't reported in the paper. So just because there's no report in the Mercury, it doesn't lead you to a natural assumption that no one's doing anything about traffic. The second point is that the note that the panel made at the meeting about traffic issues was misquoted by the Mercury. It wasn't a grounds for refusal. It was a commentary, and it was a commentary which is reflecting what I've said verbally pretty much in response to every development application in the northern suburbs, and that is that the traffic problems that people are experiencing are an existing problem that needs to be addressed, and people should be making the appropriate representations about that, and that individual development applications don't have a traffic impact which is significant enough to warrant refusal. So I just wanted to make that clear, and it was a suggestion that Council and the RMS consider holistically the traffic situation, and I understand from what I've been advised by council officers that that's exactly what's happening, that the council and the RMS are looking at it, and you confirmed that with the latest strategy that's been released by the RMS. Okay. Steve Hughes and Kate Lynch, the applicant. And don't forget that I said earlier that the panel expects the applicant to respond to some of the matters, and that's going to take longer than 5 minutes.
Thank you very much. As you know, this is a second application for this site, and Council and the local planning panel made some significant commentary regarding the last application, and we've taken that on board, and that's resulted in something that we feel responds to the criticisms made previously. Previously, we had issues of bulk, scale, and character as prime drivers, or the contamination was also a significant issue. We have a development that has a significantly reduced scale compared to the previous development, Not that that's necessarily relevant, but what is particularly relevant is that the scale now reflects the bulk and scale of individual dwellings that sit along Lawrence Hargrave Drive. And if you've seen the drawings and been on site, I hope that you recognise that the bulk and scale is commensurate with its context and surroundings. What's driving this development is a very real community need in the northern suburbs for smaller dwellings. The Australian Bureau of Statistics clearly demonstrates that there is a distinct shortfall of medium-density type or smaller dwellings for people to downsize into, and that's what this proposal is a direct response to. In terms of character, a couple of comments regarding the character. We would suggest that it is responsive to the character of Thirroul as a coastal town. It adopts the palette of materials in terms of weatherboards and face brick, skillion roofs, which are described in the Thirroul character statement. If I look at some of the detail issues in terms of the issues raised by some of the objectors today, I might probably be a little bit more succinct in terms of trying to address the issues that have been raised. Jane Bunting mentioned the retaining wall. In terms of the materials used for that, they were the highest class timber that can be used for a retaining wall in terms of structural and longevity. I believe the description is H7, but they were the highest and still are the highest quality timber that you can use for this sort of scenario. Certainly the expected life expectancy is not 15 years, it's 50, and there are guarantees in place with materials. The issue of suitability of the site was mentioned. The planning report makes it quite clear that the site, the proposals for the site are generally compliant. There are two variations. One is extremely minor, which is the landscape issue. Whilst we are over provided for in terms of meeting the DCP requirements for landscape, there is a mathematical abnormality, let's say, in terms of how the Torrens subdivision is proposed, such that two lots have 1 square meter less than the required. However, the other lots commensurately get a larger area. The other variation sought is the driveway. We would suggest that this is actually a positive contribution to the streetscape, because what it effectively does is release another parking space onto Lawrence Hargrave Drive. The arrangement of the driveway also facilitates the manoeuvring of vehicles into the site and out of the site in a forward direction, contrary to a lot of the residences along the street which reverse out. So I would suggest that that's actually a positive. Contamination was raised by Ms. Bunting. An extensive report has been provided, or series of reports, including an assessment, a remediation action plan, and as part of that, and also an audit statement. The proposed conditions also require that the site is suitably audited to adopt best practice, which the documentation submitted also reflects. Yes, there are contaminants on site, but the proposal is to clean up the site in accordance with those proposals. Privacy was mentioned as an issue. We've worked very hard to minimise the possibility of any windows overlooking, and I think if one inspects the elevations, you can see that that has been effectively realised. Ms. Coombs mentioned the issues primarily focusing on privacy, security and lifestyle. It seemed to be that privacy was the issue of major concern. Again, I would suggest in terms of direct overlooking, there are no windows that directly overlook her property. However, there is a window at the very front of the property that sits in front of the building line of the property to the north, 176. The orientation of that living area is very much towards the ocean. Yes, and I would say also that the levels are substantially lower than the living areas as well. Lisa Crawford her concerns were safety as a result of loss of privacy, health, and loss of view. The loss of privacy issue relating to safety and health, I think I've just covered. In terms of loss of view, there's a visual impact assessment that addresses the view from key windows, and you will see that we've worked very hard to keep that roof line as low as possible, and it's very close to the existing roof level of that adjacent dwelling. William Bunting referred to traffic, parking, emerging from the property, and the safety issues as a result of that. Car washing and the number of cars, I think the number 13 was mentioned. There's actually parking for 8 cars. It's physically impossible to get any more, 13 cars on the site. There is permeable paving on the site, which is a positive, which reduces the amount of runoff, but also it provides that permeable aspect. Traffic, well, I'd refer to the traffic council's traffic engineers and RMS commentary on that in terms of it's not deemed to be an issue of concern. Parking, there will be a net increase of 1 car on the road as a result of the arrangement that we've devised. And as I said previously, you can exit the site or will exit the site in a forward direction, which significantly enhances the safety side of things. Matt Mallon discussed his concerns around the streetscape. I think we've probably mentioned enough regarding that, but I'm happy to field any further questions. He felt that it was essentially the same development. I think that the proposals respond very much to the built form in the immediate environment and the wider context of Ferrol. The bulk and scale are very similar to a single individual dwelling that's typical of this area. The character I've already described in terms of the architectural style and material palette selected. Matt also mentioned traffic as being a key issue. We've already mentioned that. Murray Jones mentioned concerns about slippage and geotech. We've had a geotechnical assessment undertaken. The risk of slippage is described as low. Scale, again, I've mentioned that a number of times already. Parking. The wall design. Well, one thing that I didn't mention in response to Ms. Bunting's comments was that the proposal for the dwelling immediately adjacent to the wall will be that it will be screw piled so there's no load on the wall. Finally, Murray Jones, last comment regarding traffic. We've already touched on that. I think in a nutshell, that's a whistle-stop tour through all of the issues in terms of the proposal that we've devised, I think, is a responsible design that it takes consideration of the privacy in particular, view corridors. It's low impact, and it addresses a really serious need in Ferrol in terms of offering residences for people to downsize into so they can age in place.
Thank you. Any questions? The applicant? Edgar?
Yes. The overshadowing. I've just had a look through all the plans that have been submitted. There's no overshadowing diagrams whatsoever. Do you have any?
Yeah, they've been submitted. Maybe they've been missed out of your copy there, but they're definitely there, and they fully comply.
Okay. With the contamination of the site, how far down does that go? Like, how much?
I think the deepest. So it's a swimming pool and some backfill to the wall, historical backfill to the former wall, and that's down to a depth. The deepest is at 2 meters, but in general, it's shallower than that.
And that's on the same side as the retaining wall?
It's on the uphill slope of the retaining wall, yeah.
Will that have any effect on the retaining wall?
It's proposed that that will be removed and consolidated fill will be replaced, clean fill. And council have actually specified that any material imported to the site has to be virgin excavated natural material. So in other words, the best material you can get.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Edgar. Scott? No. Thank you very much.
Can I just make one comment regarding the conditions? Condition 3, specifically 3.2.
Hang on. Let's get to that. Yes.
I've spoken to our geotechnical consultant and our structural engineer in terms of how this might be practically managed. And if it's appropriate, I'd like to suggest a modification. And that would be that the responsibility for design documentation for drainage, retaining walls, footing construction remains with the structural engineer. So he would be the designer and sign off on that and do the inspections. And the geotechnical engineer would be responsible for compaction of fill. So happy with the supervision, et cetera, but that his remit should be limited to that, because at the moment the perception between these two engineers is that it's a little bit grey.
I don't quite understand.
Satisfaction of?
Well, yes. That would work. So site preparation, earthworks, including drainage, retaining wall and footing construction, is to be by the design of the structural engineer,
satisfaction of a qualified structural engineer?
Well, no, they should be designing that work.
At the moment,
it kind of reads like the geotechnical engineer is going to be the responsible party there. What we've been advised is the geotechnical engineer would be responsible for approving consolidation of material, and that, you know, if necessary, that they can also comment on or to the approval of the geotechnical engineer in terms of the design documentation done for the drainage, the retaining wall, footing construction, etc. At the moment, it reads
3.2.
Yeah.
Doesn't mention documentation. It's about supervision of work on the ground.
Yeah. So ordinarily,
refers to the Australian standard.
Yeah.
So is what you're proposing outside of the Australian standard, or is what you're proposing?
No, I just think it's a clarification that the geotechnical engineer, the civil engineer signs off what he has designed and is responsible for, and the geotechnical engineer signs off compaction, which is essentially what we're talking about here. At the moment, it reads as if it's slightly grey.
Yeah. And review of the documentation.
Yeah, happy for the geotech engineer to review documentation, that's fine.
So which condition talks about review of documentation?
Well, it's implied, 3.2, it's implied, because it's suggesting that the geotechnical engineer is going to supervise drainage, retaining wall and footing construction.
So whereas the level one geotechnical supervision is the issue.
Yeah, that's fine. Having level one, which is it's quite onerous, I have to add, but that should be to do with compaction of material. That's what that's what level one's normally for.
Right.
It's not to sign off drainage, retaining wall, and footing construction. That's the engineer.
Okay, we'll take that on board and discuss that with the council staff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that concludes item 3. So the people who are here for item 3, you're welcome to stay, but there's no need to. Can you, yes, please, bring Amanda Coombs' submission down for us? We'll have a read of that after we close the meeting. Thank you. Now, item 4, we have no speakers, no other than applicants' representatives, is that right? Yep. Okay, so we have Robert Gizzi, Luke Rollinson and Goran from, who's an engineer. gentlemen, I don't know whether you want to make a presentation. No, have we have any questions of you?
No questions.
Can I just ask one question?
Perhaps, Luke, if you come down and you can field the questions and fend them off to the appropriate person.
It's very small design kind of issue.
Yep.
Balcony at the front, I think it's off Murphy's Avenue. It's quite a large balcony.
It can be open space, yep.
Yeah, would you have any objection to reduce that a little bit? I think it's 40 square metres.
Yeah, I just have to... I've got no issue with reducing the size of it, personally. I don't think the proponent would either. I just have to check what the communal open space requirements are in terms of those minimums. As long as we didn't go less than the minimum, I don't think council would have an issue with that either, but we're happy to reduce that slightly if that's a worry. You were thinking about putting more landscaping in the frontage, were you?
Yeah, I thought more landscape, because it's 48 square metres,
yep.
And it's a raised structure, quite
yep.
big. I know you've got the screening and things, but I thought that's quite, that's a lot of entertaining you can have
yep.
in that space, and whether that could just be pulled
yep.
back to
yeah,
have...
Yeah, we have that supplementary internal courtyard too, which is a more passive area, so we should get the total space. So I've got no issues
and
pulling
this,
that back to a recommendation.
This has come to us for advice, not decision, so
yeah,
there's
that's
scope
fine.
There.
Yeah.
If,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
if you go back and find that,
yep.
you know, it's going to be below a minimum requirement, you can talk to the council.
No, my gut says I think we're over, but, we'd be happy to do something like that. The reason it's raised is because that's the flood part of the site, so,
No, all done? Good. Thank you for being so patient. If we had have known what was before us, we might have put you first, but as you saw, we had no registered speakers for the last item.
Fine. No worries.
So,
thanks,
all right. Thanks. Thank you, gentlemen. I'll formally close the meeting at 7:12.